Dear brothers and sisters, good morning. In the year 1931, a young nun of the age of 30 who was suffering from tuberculosis saw some visions of Jesus Christ. She had seen visions of Jesus for quite a while now. She had been seeing them at least since she was 25. She entered the convent at the age of 20. She was Polish, and in the Polish town called, I don't know how to pronounce it, it's like Polsk or something, doesn't matter. And her name and religion was Faustina Kowalska. But at the age of 30, the Lord appeared to her, showing her rays of white and red streaming from his side, representing the blood and water that he poured forth on the cross from his side, and encouraged her to be a missionary or a messenger of his divine mercy, asked her to have this painting painted, and asked her to have the Sunday after Easter, celebrated throughout the whole church as the Feast of Divine Mercy. Everybody with me so far? Great. That's not why we celebrate Divine Mercy Sunday today. At least that's not the whole story. Because while it is true she saw these visions, and while it is true she died a few years later at the age of 33 in honor of the Lord, her visions were condemned for decades in the church. Now, this is the reason for this is not because she said anything wrong, it was because they were being read in a bad translation that had eliminated a lot of things. They trusted the translator and he really messed up the Polish. And when they read it, they're like, it's not right. So they condemned her visions. And it wasn't until more people who spoke Polish who were able to read everything, and there were a couple of documents that were found, came to light, vindicated her in the 1970s. And so she was no longer condemned. And this was all going on when a cardinal, kind of famous Polish cardinal by the name of Karol Wojtyła, is working in the Vatican, and 4 years later he will be elected as Pope John Paul II. Okay. Now, John Paul II was a big fan of Faustina's, and he canonized her in the year 2000, and that's not why we celebrate Divine Mercy Sunday today. Because it's not enough for a woman to see visions, and it's not enough for her to be a saint, and it's not enough for the Pope to be her fan. That's not why we celebrate things in the liturgy. In fact, Pope St. John Paul II made very clear that he took her vision as an invitation to meditate more deeply on what the liturgy of today already said. And if you look at the opening prayer of today, which was written long before we had Divine Mercy Sunday, it starts with God of all mercy and talks about how we're washed in the waters of baptism, enlivened by the Spirit, and made redeemed by the blood of Christ. That the gospel today is the preeminent gospel for the sacrament of confession, right? Jesus breathes on them and says, whoever sins you forgive are forgiven them, and whoever sins you retain are retained. In fact, everything about today's liturgy already screamed mercy. And because of that, John Paul II said, we should recognize what's already there and celebrate today as Divine Mercy Sunday. And the reason I tell you that story is not for the sake of historical, you know, curiosity. It's important, but it's not for that reason. Last Sunday, I preached about the way that we have new prayer in the resurrection of Christ, that Christ genuinely transformed the world by rising from the dead and really transformed us, and I really feel like a lot of Christians don't tap into that. Okay. That the way we can pray now is radically different than the way that humanity has ever prayed before. And part of that, not the whole of it, not even the core of it, but part of it, is something that's very important to discuss whenever we start talking about spirituality, as we've been doing this whole year. And that is supernatural manifestations in prayer. Visions, tongues, stigmata, levitation, all of that. And so I want to talk about that during this Easter season. It's a very delicate thing, and it's going to be interrupted because I have to leave for a couple of weekends. but it's an important thing to discuss. And as I've lived as a priest, I find that when it comes to these things, I'm constantly fighting one of two errors that are all over the place. A few people get it actually right. Errors all over the place about this. And unlike most issues, people almost split evenly in error on both sides. And what are the two errors when it comes to these supernatural manifestations in prayer? The first is, like, they don't really happen, they're completely unimportant, nobody should ever even ask for that or think about that or believe in that, that miracles happen during the time of the Bible, but we're done with all that foolishness now. Okay, and then on the other side, you have those who take them way too seriously, right? Oh, I saw this vision and now I'm going to do everything it said. Or, oh, this saint saw some vision that I read about on the internet and that trumps everything my priest says in the pulpit. Or, oh, you know, I read about this saint who was floating in the air and she said that I can only have Dunkin' Donuts on one Thursday of the year and so that's how I'm going to live my life from now on. Also, because the reality is that in the resurrection of Christ, supernatural stuff should be happening to us. We ourselves are made supernatural. If you don't understand this, we literally eat God every Sunday. We've been made His children in the baptismal font. We've been sealed with the Holy Spirit in confirmation. We're not normal anymore. Things like vision should be like, yeah, okay. But then again, they should also be like, yeah, okay. They shouldn't dominate our lives. They shouldn't change our whole view of the faith. They shouldn't be something that we set our North Star by. And we see that in exactly the way that John Paul II treated Divine Mercy Sunday. He looked at the visions. He looked at the saint. He took it as an invitation to pray more about what the church was already teaching. And only afterwards did he say, yes, this is what we should be doing. We see a glimpse of that today in the first reading, where, it's a very important first reading, by the way. You may recall that I preach on a four-year cycle. I've only been here 4 years, so you haven't seen me repeat. Guess what happened next year? That four-year cycle is based on the four pillars of the catechism, which are the creed and the faith, the sacraments, the moral life, and spirituality and prayer. All of that comes from today's reading, today's first reading. I'm going to read it slightly out of order. They devoted themselves to the teaching of the apostles, to the breaking of bread, to the communal life, and to the prayers. You see that? It's the same four pillars. The teaching of the apostles, which is the apostles' creed and the faith, the breaking of the bread, which would be the sacraments, the communal life, which is how we live morally in this world, and prayers, which is what we're doing this year. Only after they're committed to that core, do we hear, all came upon everyone and many wonders and signs were done through the apostles. So the wonders and signs are really happening and they should not be dismissed and they should not be rejected as unimportant. On the other hand, they're at the second level. And the core are those four pillars. The faith, the sacraments, the moral life, and spirituality. And we get that even clearer in the second reading, where we hear from St. Peter that, yeah, your faith, the faith itself is more precious than gold, even though it's been tested by fire. Right? And so, dear brothers and sisters, before I talk about anything else, I want to make sure that we're all on the same page here. Does everyone understand that supernatural things actually happen in prayer and that they're important? Yes. And does everyone understand that the core teaching of the church and the mission of the church trumps all of that? Yes. Okay. That's the rule it's judged by. Now, you may think, well, this doesn't really happen a lot, Father Sunset. You'd be wrong. I'm not saying it's ordinary. But more people have supernatural experiences than you probably realize. How do I know this? Because y'all tell me. You're not going to tell anybody else because they're going to think you're crazy. Y'all come tell me. It's the same reason why you think nobody in Iraq sins, and I know you do because I hear them all in there, okay? You all tell me. And so I know that this is much more common than you probably think. That doesn't mean it's always true, it doesn't mean it's always real, and it doesn't mean that people aren't always crazy. But there are real things that happen in the spiritual life. And so today I want to talk about one particular form based on divine mercy, which is visions. People see visions. It happens. It happens in their prayer. Not everyone is legitimate. And as always, the visions are only an invitation, if they're genuine, they're only an invitation to reflect more deeply on what the church already teaches, not something that should substitute for the church. But we have people in the scriptures who see visions. We have many saints who've seen visions, like St. Faustina, like St. Hildegard of Bingen, St. Catherine of Siena, St. John of the Cross even once. They're real. Our entire parish is named after a vision, right? The apparition at Our Lady of Lourdes. And so they're important too. But I want to discuss what's going on there on a kind of concrete level so that you understand a little better. And this is very delicate. I understand it's early in the morning. I don't want anybody to be offended by what I'm about to say because it is very much in line with what the church teaches. And I want you to understand me clearly, so make sure that you listen through the whole thing and don't just like turn me off in the middle. Okay. Let's start with this. When Jesus turned water to wine, was that a miracle? Yes. And if you had taken the wine and put it under a microscope afterwards, would it have looked different from any other wine? No. Right? It was just wine. Even though it was miraculous in the way that it came about, if you studied it scientifically, it would look like just wine. In visions and apparitions, they can happen in one of two ways. Don't freak out. The first is, like at Lourdes, Our Lady, who is bodily assumed into heaven, can bodily be present, and we can see her the same way that I see that pillar. The pillar of fire on Mount Sinai was like that. The angel of God pulled together like energy and fire, and it was actually a physical manifestation. When Jesus appears to St. Paul on the way to Damascus, that's it's literally the risen Lord standing there in front of him. But those are rare. They're only in the case when it has to be a very public manifestation. Like the sun dancing with Fatima. The vast majority of the time, the visions of the saints, if you had like a monitor plugged up to their head, an EEG, would look indistinguishable from a hallucination. Okay? Doesn't mean they're not miraculous. They're still coming from the Lord. I'm saying what your brain is doing is indistinguishable from a hallucination. It doesn't mean the saints are crazy. Some of the saints were crazy. That doesn't mean that the saints are crazy. It means that even though they have a supernatural origin, the thing themselves that's going on in your brain is natural. And the reason why I need you to understand that is because it explains a lot about why the visions of the saints can seem really crazy. And one of my favorites is St. Hildegard of Bingen, who sees these crazy visions, and then she gets the explanation of them from the Lord, and she's like, it seems like she's so mad because she sees these incredibly crazy visions, and then the explanation is so basic, and she's just like, are you kidding me? Right? She saw one example that I love. She saw a mountain of pure iron with its base upon the ground and its peak cutting into heaven, and around the mountain of iron was a wheel of fire that was burning, and in the mountain of iron was a cave with three green giants who spake one into another. And she's like, huh? And God said, the mountain represents the soul, and the wheel of fire represents grace, and the three giants represent faith, hope, and love. And she's like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me right now? All that drama for something we learn at First Communion, right? But the reality is that when God speaks to us in these supernatural ways, it's like blinding light right in your eyeball. It's too much for the human system to receive easily. And so when he speaks to his visionaries, their brain tries to capture it and kind of shoots up these very strange visions. Why am I telling you this? Why is this important to know? It's important to know because the church never, ever, ever looks at what the vision itself is. Because she understands this. She always looks at what the meaning of the vision is. What is the vision trying to say? What is the vision trying to communicate? We don't care if Jesus looked like he had blue hair in your vision. What we care about is, what is the meaning that God is trying to speak to you or not? That's how we judge if a vision is legitimate. That's how we judge if it's really from God or not. If it's in line with and brings greater vivacity to the teaching of the church. It's the meaning, it's the meaning, it's the meaning. And I think that's important. One other thing, people get freaked out all the time. They learn about some of the saints having visions, and then they realize that the way Jesus appeared to like a nun was the same way he appeared in a painting in her wall, and they get all upset because they think it's fake now. No, no, no. The Lord was still speaking, and her brain translated that the best that it could with something familiar. In the same way with the wine at Cana, it was still a supernatural origin. It's still a miracle, but the wine itself is natural. Do y'all understand that to some degree? Yes? Okay. This is not heresy. I promise you, this is completely in line with the teaching of the church and how she talks about these things. Very briefly, I'd like to talk about two other things that are connected to this. And one of them is when the Lord uses our imagination. Not a vision, not a hallucination, but just our imagination. And this happens with the spiritual exercise of St. Ignatius of Loyola, where he has you put yourself in the place where it's like he wants you to smell how Bethlehem smelled and see who's standing where. He wants you to really daydream about it. And sometimes the Lord kind of steps into the daydream, and suddenly it's no longer you who's dreaming, it's him who's running the meditation. And things are kind of come to light in that, that are very beautiful. Again, it's partially because you disposed your brain for that by thinking it through all the way first, but he takes that up. Just like he took the water, he takes that up and transforms it into something supernatural. Does everybody understand that? Okay. We're limited in time here. Last one. Very, very, very rarely, more rarely than that, very rarely, God will also speak to us in our dreams. However, listen to me, guys. Listen to me. That is extraordinarily rare. We see it in Joseph the patriarch and Saint Joseph in the New Testament. We see it in some of the saints. Is it common? No, it is rare. So don't come to me and tell me how you had 43 dreams last night and Jesus was talking to you in all of them. What happened was you ate sonic poppers before you went to sleep like you weren't supposed to do, and you saw all kinds of weird things. Okay? We throw meaning on our dreams far, 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 far too easily. But I can't deny that very rarely God speaks to us in our dreams, because he does it in sacred scripture. But it's more likely that you will see a vision of the Sacred Heart while you're awake than that you would have a divine dream. Because he understands how likely we are to misinterpret that. Does everybody understand that? Okay, good. And so, dear brothers and sisters, I tell you these things because I want you to appreciate them. I also want you to discern them, and I want you to put them in their place in the Christian life. As something that we appreciate, as something that we love, as something that we're open to, as something that we're not scared of, as something that we know happens. And then on the other hand, of realizing that it's more icing on the cake than it is the cake. That it's more something that enlivens the faith rather than replaces the faith. That it's something that's meant to spice up our prayer life, not be the substance of it. And if you understand that, then you understand more than most. God bless you all.